This is RSBNB Update, episode 637, recorded Wednesday, September 20th, 2017, Reinventing Invention. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. This week, we are a bit early, but that's, of course, because we got RuneFest coming this Saturday, and we're going to be talking a bit about how we're covering that. But that's not to take away, of course, from the very, very large update that we have this week to RuneScape, RuneScape proper, Invention Batch 2. So joining Dave and myself this week is Tanis.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You'll remember, Tanis, you were on that episode back in January 2016 when Invention first came out.
I was, yeah.
We had a discussion there. We tried to get some of the panel together for that without being too full. On that initial episode back then was myself, Colton, you, and I believe Mr. Bistro. Mr. Bistro, unable to make it this week. Colton is, I believe, taking a break from RS at this point, so I think this is the best we can do in regards to that panel. But Dave, you're also here.
Yeah, you guys have to deal with me instead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got your invention experience going on. Did some inventing, and I think
I did some inventing back in my day.
Right. Did you do invention for Double XP weekend, or was that something else this year?
No, it was not. Not this year. I don't really think I ever did it for a bonus experience, because prior to this bonus experience, it was never like the disassembly experience. It was always, if I recall correctly, like the weapon and equipment XP was actually doubled, or, you know, 50%.
Right. So okay. Well, so Invention Batch 2. So let's just get a couple of questions out of the way here. You guys feel like this completes the skill?
I think it's one step closer to being as complete as it will be. I think this is huge in terms of the skill, for sure. I think the skilling part of the skill that came out before, it was obviously just combat. You know, you level up your staff, level up your gear, disassemble it, siphon it. That was it. They added skilling. I think that really sort of broadened the horizons a little bit, and I think this sort of tied it all together. Now, that's not to say that they can't add anything else, but I think this filled a huge gap, so for whatever that's worth.
All right. How about you, Tanis?
I do believe that it has completed the skill. Like Dave said, there's room for what they had talked about initially with maybe additional, like, a quest rewards or this or that. But as for a complete skill, yeah, finally. This is actually what we were promised. So,
yeah.
Taking a while.
And that, and I mean, that goes into the question. Right. Okay. And that was going to be my next question. You know, is this ultimately what you want from a RS update in 2017? And is this a win for the players? And more importantly, at this stage, is it a win for Jagex?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think all around the board, it's very positive. You know, we've seen updates over the course of since Invention came out. And, you know, it's just kind of been, you know, back and forth, kind of just a crapshoot. But I think this really, you know, it does good for Jagex. You know, it makes them look good. Players love it. It's, you know, doing great for the skill itself. And, you know, as we've said before, this really does sort of bring everything full circle. And, you know, it's sort of what we were given an idea of when they announced Invention. Oh, you're going to get stuff to help you with other skills and stuff. And we, you know, this is that. So it's definitely, you know, come full circle. So,
all right.
And what I like about it is that they actually did really well on the things that they have been, that they've struggled with in the past. So, like, for example, I think they took the time to think of about a lot of little things. If you look at some of the devices, and we're not going to go through all the components, I know, but some of those components in there are things that you have had setting in your sack for, you know, since Invention came out. There's no purpose. There's no use for them, or very limited use for them. Now, I feel like There's a lot more use for the components we have. There's a much bigger market for your energy. It ties in with divination more. It's really completed. On top of that, I think it's actually pretty well balanced, which just rarely happens. So they've done really well with the things that they've struggled with. I mean, I got to give them props on that.
Yeah. And, you know, when it came out, the tie-in component was certainly lacking. And, you know, that raises a question. Is it still now worth being called an elite skill? Because for the longest time, it didn't feel like an elite skill.
No, it wasn't really – it didn't reflect that. The content of the skill did not reflect that. It was kind of – it was an elite skill only because the XP curve was different. It was more linear. That's really the only thing
that... You need those level 80s to unlock it as well.
Right, exactly. That was really the only sort of indication that it was elite. But now, you know, we saw a little taste of it when, you know, skilling came out for invention. And now that we actually have stuff that we can implement while we're not even logged on. You know, we had that AFK thing where, you know, all the devices that tie into, you know, every sort of skill or playstyle, that really sort of... adds justification to why we need 80 in those, you know, three skills, you know, because it's the high level content that's sort of making that process automated. So,
all right. And, you know, I'm going to agree with you guys. It definitely does feel like it's, you know, completed the invention skill, and it feels like an elite skill right now. And, you know, so far what I can tell, it seems as though the actual content is being well received by players, which is excellent. And, you know, players are happy. Jagex is happy with what they did. It came out relatively unscathed, but we'll talk about that later. So I think overall that's a win. And I think we were talking about this at some point before that when you're in a situation like Jagex is in right now, you're looking for things to kind of tick off a list, the unfinished business list, as we talked about last week. And the reason I was such a proponent for that mining and smithing update to come sooner rather than later is because it's all about ticking those boxes off and signifying that you're making progress and doing things. And with invention being so large, players might not realize it. And when I'm talking about players, I'm not talking about you guys who are hosting here with me or the people who listen to this podcast, but I'm talking about the general player bases. They might not realize it, but this huge update coming to RS that is effectively the second part of a skill, and I think larger than Invention was on its main release. Would you guys say that? This is larger than the first release of Invention?
Without a doubt.
Yeah, content-wise, absolutely.
And it's so much... It's just thought through so much better than that initial release. I mean, we can't forget the 1600% buff they had to do 2 days later. I mean,
oh yeah. You know, everybody bought a hand cannon for, you know, 3K. You could sell them for like 5 mil each, and people were getting, what was it? It less than 24 hours, 23 hours. We had the first 99, and within the first week we had 120.
No, I mean, it was 36 just, hours till the first 120.
36. Okay.
Gotcha. And we had very limited perks and just very, I mean, it was just very limited.
And mind now, you, the people that did get those levels really didn't train invention. They just sort of made the most
disassembled to get it, right?
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't the spirit or of what the skill is supposed to be. And I know they call it an elite skill. I think in my mind, it's actually more of an enhancement skill because it enhances everything else that it applies to. Like, it makes your combat better. It makes skilling better.
Skill in the, you know, very sense of support rather than agility. Yeah, it sort of helps, but this is literally a support skill because it does it enhances. I like that analogy.
Yeah, it's very good. And you guys have just justified what I said here, is that, you know, in general, I think players aren't going to think that, oh, this came out and, you know, it's a huge morale booster to the community, and it's ultimately a great update. Yeah, they're going to see it's a great update when they can see the things they can make with it. But what they aren't realizing, what I think the rank and file player base isn't realizing, is that when you get a huge update like this, that is Invention Batch 2 effectively finishing the skill and completing it, it in effect raises the morale of the community, because it's like, okay, we can see stuff through from the very beginning here of an idea that Jagex put out. There's there's our opinions that were gathered when the dev blogs were happening. There was some talk about that all the way through, and here it came out in a reasonable amount of time. I think it was June or July we were talking with the dev blogs about what these machines were going to do and how they were going to work, and here we are in September. They're released. So it's a morale booster in the sense that it shows the community that the process JAGX has put in place for implementing updates works. And they might not be thinking that, the players might not be thinking that, but that is indeed what's going on in their minds. And that's what's going to make everyone happy in the weeks and months ahead.
Well, and I think we've seen a trial run of two different strategies this year, and we can clearly say which one is the better strategy. Because it's not just this release. One of the things that I've gripe about and I want to see improved is the consistency of their updates and the quality. I don't want to be on this roller coaster of, oh, this is great, oh, Menophos, oh, Adventure Match 2. You know, like, quit playing right with my heart here, JAGX. And what they did since the Unfinished Business has been they made those improvements.
Shattered Worlds.
They were smaller.
Achievements.
Yeah, but they were wins. They racked up
Invention
these
Batch 2.
Smaller wins. And then, boom, hit it with Invention Batch 2. I mean, this is the clear winner. This is the clear direction that they need to continue. And think about this. This is crazy. Invention Batch 2, with a few other, like, okay, let's just say everything from July till now, throw in the achievements, throw in Shattered World improvements. If you put that together, if they had done that in June as the first expansion, would we be where we are today? Or would they still be trying to go down the expansion road because it was well received? And Menophos wasn't.
That's a very interesting question.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
You know.
And but at the same time, it would be nice to batch all these together in terms of one huge expansion, which is, I think, what you were saying. But the teams would overlap. So in some ways, yeah, the botched release of Menophos has given wind to this, you know, second birth of a winning streak.
It saved us, actually. I mean, it almost saved the year because, I mean, it's just so clear that this is the right way to go.
Yeah,
you know, this is the right thing to do.
I like winning, and it's very satisfying to see these kinds of updates. So, so with that being said, you guys have raised some really good points here, and we're not even into the content yet. So, I think what we're talking about now. We've kind of gone to a bit of a meta discussion here about whether or not this is the right way to go or whatnot for the updates. So looking back, given the fact that, you know, Invention Batch 2 wasn't exactly polled as to should we do this, should we do that with the skill, what effectively happened is feedback was listened to by JAGX. JAGX came up with a plan and they executed it. Now going back to the mining and smithing update, what if that wasn't pulled and JAGX just decided to do their own thing based on feedback?
It could have.
Would we have
I think it would.
Would we have seen the strife in the community that we did over that poll?
Oh, well, you wouldn't have seen the strife.
Right.
I think you would have. What you would have seen, though, is it would have been a delayed strife because you got to. I always remember that the problem with that was, it's about the money, Lebowski. That's what people cared about. They thought they were going to lose.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's no way to avoid that. It just would have probably prolonged it. But I see where you're coming from,
right,
with that.
Basically,
when they know what they're doing, they should do it.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Like, forget the polls. Just do what you're doing. Invention is a great example of that. And, I mean, it wasn't even a matter of JAGX just coming up with a strategy. People were talked to and consulted with when it came to designing the machines and whatnot and how it should work. So it's not as though we had no impact into this. And I think it worked really well. So
yeah, I think the most effective way to go about it is to collect a general sentiment, whether it be forums, dare I say Reddit, those sort of outlets.
Don't
collect a general sentiment. But I don't think, as we've seen in the recent past, polling for a concrete hard number percentage of what you want. I think you can get into a gray area there, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe this was pulled. The whole bank rework, they sort of slipped it in, you know, last week or whatever, saying we've put that on the back burner. We're getting RS Mobile out. Like, that's our main goal.
Right. And
to me,
so.
That's fine. They took control. They didn't say, do you want us to focus on this or that? They said, look, bank rework, back burner, we know you want it, but we're getting RS Mobile up, because I think they know that this is huge. You know, everyone's excited about this, whether you play now or you played 10 years ago, it's going to be big. And they sort of took that initiative, and I really like that. And it really wasn't, there was not an explosion. Yeah.
Very good question, now that you mention it. So, and I'd be curious to know what the people think on this. I'm not trying to, you know, cause any division in the community with this, but I'm actually going to run a poll on the RSBNB account and see what people would prefer for to come out first. Because, I mean, like, you guys raise an interesting question. Do the players want that? But if we took it to a poll, what would the answer be, right?
Right.
So,
because I think the general sentiment speaks a lot louder than, like I said, a hard percentage, because there might be a less percentage of one option, but the sentiment might be stronger because there might be, you know, a 6-page post on something on outlining, you know, how this is going to affect the community, where other people just like, oh, bank rework, we've wanted that since, you know, 2006, you know, as to where would that be best for the community, because a lot of it's just a sort of hack job. Get this off my UI. I don't want it blinking. Make a vote. Boom, done. It's not necessarily the general sentiment of what needs to happen.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So I think we've pretty much decided here that this is a win for Jagex, and ultimately we like what we had with Invention Batch 2. So we should probably talk about some of those things that came out. So let's begin. Before we get started, what do you guys prefer more, the devices or the machines?
Oh man, but they all work together, kind of. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've made a little bit of both, but I don't have either filled out completely.
All right.
So, yeah,
I will have to say, from a just off the bat, what do I like more? I would say devices are going to have more utility for me, but I really love the concept of machines and, you know, how they work, and sort of add that sort of, you know, AFK ability to the game itself, not necessarily the skill, but just the game in general. So yeah, main utility, I would definitely say devices though. So,
all right.
And you can like strategize with the machines, which is fun. Like, do you want it to be a quality of life thing for you? You know, are you like Iron Man style, you know, breaking, having your stuff broke down, alking it automatically, you know, making your own potions, or do you want to maybe try to make a buck, put in some sawmills, you know? It's, I love that, like, aspect of, I mean, it's almost kind of construction that could have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The way I kind of see it is, it's basically Kingdom 2.0. You know, and not necessarily literally, but figuratively, because, you know, you're sort of doing that AFK thing. You know, you're putting you're allocating your resources, and then it sort of does it while you're not playing. But in a literal sense, you can take the materials you get from your kingdom and you can let your machines work with it and do, you know, what they will with it. So that sort of ties in with that. And I think that's a great synergy they got going on there. So,
All right. That's true.
So if you guys logged in this week, the first thing that you would have noticed when you go to the Invention Guild or any kind of invention workshop is that you had a boatload of blueprints to discover. And with this, one of the first things they said was happening with Invention Batch 2 is they removed the inspiration mechanic, which was previously needed to unlock machines, tools, and whatnot to build them. In the discover phase of invention. Now, instead of that, the more you optimize your blueprint, the more XP you get. And until October 1st, following double XP weekend, you do get an extra 50% XP from doing this. Now, we'll talk a bit about the quote-unquote bugs later, because there were a few. But when people first logged in, the report was if you had 120 invention, you could get anywhere between 6 and 8 million free XP. I don't know if you guys tried this, but how'd that work out?
Well, going into the release of the update, I was already 126 invention. And mind you that I had a bunch of blueprints that I previously hadn't discovered, so that I've obviously that skews the numbers a little bit, because I pretty much just stockpiled inspiration, as probably a lot of people did, because I really had no use for pestiferous components or, you know, the high level 90 stuff, because I just didn't need them. So, but anyway, no, I went from 126 to 128. So whatever the XP gap between that is, give or take a few mil, is what I got. I think it was around 7 mil or so. But yeah, no, that was the hefty, quite a hefty chunk of overall XP, to say the least. So,
all right, how about you, Tennis?
Yeah, I got right about 7 mil, and not all of my. I mean, my blueprints were at a minimal excellent, but not all of them were perfect. Like, there was a few perfects, mostly in the excellent category.
Okay.
I don't know if that had anything to do with. I mean, I think it did, though.
It would have affected it just a bit. Yeah. But so lots of free XP. So definitely check if you're anywhere higher level than invention. You can make some pretty nice gains out of this. So
yeah, and if you've been sort of hoarding up inspiration, which was obviously removed, then you know it's worth it just to go back and get that at least until or before the bonus goes away, because you know it's free and you've probably had it sitting there for quite a while. So
yeah, definitely. All right, so machines, we're going to start with those. They're powered by generators, and 3,000 machine charge is granted per divine charge. So a machine charge is basically the currency that you use to power these machines, and that's given by the divine charges, which we already know, and that comes from invention, and you can make those. So not too bad of a mechanic right there. We got 5 machines, each with 2 levels, and these machines are built inside the Invention Guild, which is the little area that's just north of Falador. And they did some graphical reworks on this area, and it looks pretty neat. So you run down these stairs, and you'll see some hotspots and whatnot where you can build your generator and then build 5 machines, and you ultimately get to decide what to put down in there. Of course, you definitely do need the generator, because if you don't build the generator, then you can't power these machines. There's a simple generator, a large generator, and a jumbo generator. The simple at 60, the large at 80, and the jumbo at level 102. And they each require different components and whatnot to build. And then you power them, of course, with the divine energy.
And you have to build the previous one to go to the next.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I did not know that, because I do not have 80 invention to build a large.
I will say I really like the way they did the way they laid it out in terms of hotspots. It's not like construction where there's just a ghost of an image there,
right,
per se. It's actual machines there, but they're covered up, like they haven't been activated or they're dusty. It keeps the room filled out, so it, you know, the atmosphere looks nice, and it's not just this empty box, but it's also very indicative of, you know, what machines are up and running and which ones literally aren't built yet. So
right.
I just think that's cool the way they implemented that.
All right. So as an example here, the simple generator, we won't go through all of them because, I mean, you guys have the components and you can research them on your own. But the simple generator requires 100 smooth parts, 30 connector parts, 30 metallic parts, and 100 simple parts. So that's not too bad, is it? I don't think.
No.
No. The large generator goes up a bit, and so on and so forth. So after you build the generator, you have the ability to access these machines. And there's 5 machines. Each of them come with 2 different levels. I think the machines are definitely, like you guys said, kingdom management and whatnot, kingdom management 2.0. So we got the automatic hide tanner and an optimized hide tanner. I'm just going to run through the list quickly, then we'll talk about each of them. A partial potion producer and the potion producer DX, a plank maker and a high capacity plank maker, the alchemizer and alchemizer Mark II, and the final one here is the auto disassembler, which is the lowest level one of them all. So that's interesting that they put that at the bottom of the list here. That's a little bit weird considering that's the lowest level one, but hey, I mean, maybe it's just
I think it makes sense because it sort of gives lower levels the ability to disassemble stuff so they can use it to, you know, obviously get higher levels. So I think that makes sense. The one that is actually related to the skill is lower, so it can sort of synergize and work with the player to advance the skill further if you don't want to sit there and disassemble 3,000 potion flasks or something.
Yeah, so. All right, makes sense. And you get a nice interface that's laid out. And, you know, that they could have just said that, you know, put it in a simple chat box and you can tab through it and say, I want to build an automatic hide tanner. And then inside the chat, it would say that you need X, Y, Z of the various components. But instead, they actually have a specific interface here that shows what each of the machines is capable of and what they provide and what the running costs are as well. So they did a really good job with this UI, and it's little tinges like this, I think, that make it feel as though, you know, it's a complete skill, and this is more than happened in the first release of it. So
the beauty is in the details, especially, you know, just like I mentioned with how they did the whole hotspot thing, because they could have very well just basically copy pasted the code from you know, construction, just have a ghost of a workbench there and then you do it. But they really tied in the UI. And, you know, even though it really doesn't have much to do with the content itself and the end result, presenting that content, I think, is super important. And I really do think they hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. When's the last time that you've been on this show and talked about they got the balance and the UI right?
It's been a minute. I'll say that.
where have these guys been? Like, right, wherever they've had them, you come on.
Someone needs a promotion. Let's just say that.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So let's go into these actual machines here, because that's probably what everyone is most interested in at this point. So starting off with the hide tanners, those are at level 93 and 111. They have a 10,000 and 30,000 hide capacity. They produce 45 or 140 tanned hides per hour, and they require 225 or 840 machine charge per hour, respectively. So, and I mean, when you look at the amount of machine charge that you're putting in here, you're going to see a huge use for divine energy coming with these things, because I mean, this amount per hour, and you do the math of how long you're going to let them run for, it makes sense that we're going to see an increase in people, doing divination. So,
which I think is awesome. You know, that's probably in my top three skills, as weird as it is, but this is coming from a guy that got, you know, 99 runecrafting back in 2008. I really like how they're making divination, like keeping it relevant and having a demand for the energy. So it's not like, oh, I got to go train divination. I'm literally just going to sit here and I just need it to get X level. It's, you know, you can get that energy. And I mean, God forbid say that it's actual moneymaker now. You know, I'm going to go train divination. You're actually making money if you want to sell the energy, because the demand for it is going to be so much higher now. I think that's so cool. So.
Yeah. Though there might be some question about that with the sucker thing that came out, but we'll talk about that after. So hide tanners, we haven't run the numbers on this one, but I'd imagine if you did this, you could make some money off this. Now the partial potion producer DX.
Have a trouble there, Shane.
Yeah, yeah. At 90 and 114, 3750 and 13,000 capacity, they produce 13 and 40 unfinished potions per hour. So, you know, you could go through these and you could just, you know, do this manually. But if you're working up towards a double XP weekend and whatnot,
so if you start now, you might have enough to get to 120 Herblore next double experience weekend.
Yeah. And
don't take that as advice, but I mean, I think that's, you know,
and you still require vials of water and whatnot. So it's not
sure
it's going to be, I mean, I can see time being reduced on this, and you know, we might even see a whole new market emerge for unfinished potions, because lots of people buy those to do Herblore.
Yeah.
So.
And it'll shut the market down that already existed of people doing that for money.
Right, by hand.
It'll close the gap.
Yeah. But it's, maybe. I mean, that's the way it works, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, 13 and 40 per hour really isn't that much.
They're automating their jobs.
Who would have ever thought we'd be talking about that on a RuneScape podcast?
Right. Get some politics going on here. Job creation. We got the unemployment rates going down. You know, the approval rating of Jagex has actually gone up. We could just go on and on and on. Have our quarterly earnings. I mean, it's just it's a circus.
Oh, I'd love to see those. Uh-huh. But all right, next up is the plank maker and high capacity plank maker. This one was interesting, and there were some numbers being thrown around the friends chat yesterday with this. This requires 99 and 117 invention, so pretty high up there. They produce 13 and 40 per hour, respectively. So once again, kind of slow, but you let this run for a week and you're still going to get some kind of benefit from this at the end of the day.
I think looking at this, I don't think people should be too concerned about the numbers being low, because keep in mind, this isn't a replacement for doing right. it. You're literally doing it offline. So the same with the kingdom. I mean, yeah, you get X amount of logs every week, but that's X amount of logs that you literally didn't have to cut. So it's more of, hey, this is just kind of on the side. It's nice little profit and, you know, kind of keep you engaged, but it's not, because if it was that much higher, literally no one would make planks and no one would make potions and stuff, but it's just a nice little supplement to income or production costs.
Exactly. 225 and 600 machine charge and 2,500 and 7,500 capacity respectively for this. Now, there were some numbers being thrown around, and when it comes down to it, if you take your mahogany logs that you get from the kingdom, I believe the number was that for each log you make 1,000 GP profit here. So right now, this would be a good one to do if you had that ability to make them. So, and if you, like, you just throw 7,500 in there and bang, there you go. What's that? What would that be? 7.5 mil.
Yep.
Yeah. So definitely,
that's actually quite solid for being, you know, having no work. So
exactly
for what it's worth. I mean, the market will equalize, I think, in the next week or so, and I think that'll be when I'll really sort of take advantage of the long term profit potential. But either way, I mean, plank maker is gonna, there's gonna be margin there no matter what. So
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is also a good way to think about maybe doing construction for yourself. If you wanted to do it self-sufficiently, you know, you could just find some mahogany trees, or even just, you know, gather at the kingdom over time and mm-hmm. then start collecting these mahogany planks. And then whenever double XP weekend comes, just make something mahogany, and you get rid of the cost of actually making planks and paying for that. What is it? 2,500 GP per mahogany plank, I think. So
yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, or you could just, you know, stockpile them all until Jagex decides to, you know, get the construction rework in full gear. But, you know, I'm, you know, you may have heard that from me before, but, you know, I'm not bitter or anything. But anyway. Yeah.
All right. Then next we have the Alchemizer and Alchemizer Mark II at levels 72 and 108 with 1,500 and 5,000 capacity. Does 8 alks and 25 per hour for the higher level one. Requires 20 and 550 machine charge. Now here's a little clincher with this. The lower level one requires fire runes, but the upper level one only requires nature runes. So you're definitely going to want the higher level one on this, so you don't need to be dumping fire runes into it to run. And, you know, I think you'd do this if you just finished a fletching marathon or something, and you're going for 200 mil fletching XP, and you ended up in a situation where you had, you know, thousands of U bows or magic bows or something like that, and you just wanted to throw them out there, right? So
right. Well, and I think a similar situation is going to be here is with the potion producer. I think there's going to be some arbitrage there, and I think that the gap is going to close, because I know at least, I don't want to say back in the day, but, you know, there's always that table of items you can buy, and then they alk for more. So I think that gap we will see sort of close in that money-making method. I don't think that's as big of a market as the whole potion and the partial potions, but I think that I'll be interested to see how that market sort of reacts to this thing, and see that gap sort of close in terms of market price and alk price because of this machine. So,
all right. Then finally, we got the auto disassembler and auto disassembler Mark II at level 60 and 81. 7,500 and 13,000 capacity disassembles 35 and 60 per hour. Requires 180 and 230 machine charge per hour. So the lower level one, but of course the one that synergizes with the skill. I guess you'd use this if you just didn't want – you wanted components instead of GP on this. So,
oh, this is a great machine. That's my favorite machine.
Oh, okay. I didn't expect to hear anyone say that. Why is that?
Just because like it – for one, I plan to do a lot of charge making. And so you need those simple parts, and dismantling is a pretty big time sink. So to be able to have that producing my simple parts so that I can then be making the charge packs and only focusing on divination, that's really big. So I just, it's really nice. And you can use it for other things. Like if you want to, you know, if you need the components for like your, spring cleaner, springs, stuff like that. It's more of a quality of life. It's not a GP thing, but I really like it.
All right. Fair enough. I think if it was me and I was just looking at this, you know, off the bat, I would probably go with the plank maker and use that for my own construction. Potion producer if I could find secondaries, but beyond that, I think combination potions are still my best bet. So how about you, Dave? Which would be yours?
I think my go-to is going to be plank maker, just because I do enjoy construction. I think 120 construction is, I don't want to say on the horizon, but it's definitely in my sights. You know, within the next year or two, I think I will slowly be, you know, sort of pushing for that. So any sort of money I can save there is awesome. And then, you know, the alchemizer too, because at this point, I really don't have much need for extra XP necessarily. Obviously I'm comped, so anything that can sort of make me money, just to, you know, go towards my trim goals, you know, works for me. So I think those will be my two go-to here in the future. So
all right, well, speaking of springs and whatnot, let's move on to the devices and the spring cleaner.
Hold this on, was just Shane. Wait, all just right, one sec. There's something we forgot.
Okay.
So the tiers, like tier one, tier two.
Oh, yes.
Think of those as like points, and you can have 6 points in your invention workshop.
Oh,
so you can only have three tier two machines.
Okay.
Or you could have six tier one machines.
Okay, so it's kind of like
any
a weight
combination
then.
Of which
you can only carry so much weight in your truck. You got to optimize to determine what you want.
Yeah, all right. Essentially,
see, I didn't know that because I don't have the level here for this. So, thank you. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Good point. All right, so devices. We got a surprise with this, and they made the spring cleaner an invention device. Of course, you know, this is the right thing to do because the spring cleaner was a treasure hunter item initially, and it's just one of the most useful things you can get, that it, you know, breaks down items into their raw materials. And it was a shame you could only get that from treasure hunter. So it's about time that we have another way to get that in game. So that is one of the devices that was added here. This one's really simple to make, requires 300 simple parts, 500 tensile parts, 300 flexible parts, and 50 precise components.
I've said it before, and I will say it again. I always love seeing Treasure Hunter rewards come into the game that you can actually earn that way. I believe I said it last episode or the episode before that, especially with the skilling outfits and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So being the spring cleaner was pretty much the sought-after reward from Treasure Hunter, and seeing this come into the game, you know, within a skill, being able to earn it in-game is awesome. And this is one of my favorite devices.
Yeah.
I would say.
And what's more, you can also make the springs for it, the tight springs, which each require 120 tessile and one subtle component. So you can charge them, and you don't need to worry about you need to spend your own GP on that and relying on people populating the market. So.
Yep.
It's wonderful. And what better avenue to bring things in from Treasure Hunter than invention? I mean, it's perfect for that.
Yeah. They also brought in gizmo bags, regular size, medium, and large. And basically what these do is it's a bank space saver, so that you don't need to, you don't need to have gizmos, the shells and whatnots clogging up your bank, and you can just have a nice way of collecting them all together. So that's a nice little quality of life thing to keep our banks clean.
Especially with being able to remove them now and interchange them.
Exactly. So
very nice.
Yeah, we didn't mention that, but we'll get to that later. Of the
spoiler, other, spoiler. Gosh. Pause, rewind. Sorry.
We also got the Combat Dummy Mark II, which is something that was teased coming with this for this, and this was for the PVM crowd specifically to ensure that they can build adrenaline and whatnot before their boss encounter begins. Kind of just a nice little thing because they were using the Treasure Hunter ones, I guess.
It's the tough guys. It's for them.
Yeah. Hey, PVM gets something.
Yeah. Finally, they've been so much about all their lack of updates. I mean, this is your update, my friends. This is it. Yeah. Enjoy it because this is all you're getting.
Oh, I still go back to that joke you made a couple weeks ago, Dave.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Next up is the mechanized siphon. Oh, boy. I almost butchered that one. I almost called it the mechanized siphon. That wouldn't be right.
Protion siphon.
So basically what this is, it's a pocket slot item. You'll store your siphons in it, and it will be set by you to automatically siphon at a specific level. So if you want to siphon at level 12, you can do that. If you want to siphon at level 9, you can do that. You just set whatever level, and it'll grant you the invention XP, so you don't train past those couple extra levels, because if you're training with fast XP, sometimes that can go quick. So that's nice.
Oh, it's great. You'll never have another piece go to level 13 or 14 because you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Definitely. Also, other devices that they have here, the Spirit Tree Rerouter and the Portable Fairy Ring. So basically what these are ways of accessing the Spirit Tree Network and the Fairy Rings from wherever you are. They each have 10 charges to use, and basically when you use them, you get teleported to Zanaris if you're using the Portable Fairy Ring, or you get the Spirit Tree interface if you're using a Spirit Tree, and then of course you can get around like that. So just another way of teleporting around the game world. Which one do you guys think is going to be more useful, the Spirit Tree Rerouter or the Portable Fairy Ring?
My friends have really been enjoying the Fairy Ring. They're really into, some of them are really into clues, and so they've been loving it for that.
Yeah, I think in the long run, the Fairy Ring is going to, so to speak, rise above the Spirit Tree, just because I think Spirit Trees are, well, I don't want to say more accessible than Fairy Rings, because you have the Fairy Ring just north of the Yanil Lodestone. But yeah, for clues, and I always find myself using Fairy Rings, whether it's to, you know, go to the Ancient Cavern, Polypore Dungeon, you know, just sort of the, especially for Slayer, I guess, you know, just not necessarily for clues, but that is awesome for clues as well. And it's just, you know, grab it out of the bank, boom, you're gone. So yeah, I really like the Portable Fairy Ring for sure.
Yeah, I think Fairy Ring is going to be more useful just because there's so many of them. Those are at level 92 and 94. They're really cheap to make. The Spirit Tree Rerouter only requires 5 organic, 2 living, and 2 fungal components. The Fairy Ring is 5 organic, 2 healthy, and 2 fungal components as well. So, you know, very cheap to make, and 10 charges each. So nice little device you can use. They also have the Herb Protector, which is a way of reviving, or rather preventing any herb patch from dying. So
this is groundbreaking for Shane, and there is a pun there, and it is very intended.
This is
groundbreaking.
Oh,
groundbreaking.
Oh, okay. All right. Because you have to break ground to plant a herb seed. I got you.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Yes, definitely. You know, the GE price on these is going for 20K right off the bat. I don't know if they'll be worth that much, but they require a plant cure, 30 organic parts, and 2 healthy components. So you could imagine using these for your farming runs. And you only really need 5? Oh, am I messing up here? Yes, there are seven. There are seven. There are seven herb patches. Okay, I thought I messed that up. I was forgetting the Prif patch.
Ah, yes.
Because Wilderness and Trollheim are disease free always, so you don't need one for those, but you do need one for the other five. And I mean, I'm of a mixed opinion if you actually need this. The worst I think I've ever had was four herb patches dead out of seven. Which, when you think about it, is pretty bad.
Is there an herb patch in the Juju place? I can't remember.
There is. There's two of them, but you can only use them for planting those herb lore.
Oh, the special ones. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. I'm thinking of the fruit tree that's an actual normal.
Yes,
fruit
you can use that fruit tree patch there. Definitely.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's one of the things that people who are just starting out farming don't know. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Hidden secret.
But
now we have use for organic and healthy components.
Yeah.
And no, so use for
this is what you're
saying. I think I have about 5,000 sort of packed up that I just never use.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
Shane's salivating. I don't know if you can hear that.
Yeah, I am. And you know, this is why I need to get 96 in invention to get going on
this.
There
you go.
I'm currently 76, and you know, there was a reason, I don't want to advocate this, but Prif has been out for about 3 years. And if you have the Elven task sets done, you get 2 crystal blossoms per day, and those have a chance of providing organic and healthy components. So I don't know if there's any other way to get there. I know since invention batch 2 came out just a couple of days ago, I was having a look at my crystal blossom when I picked it yesterday to see what its story was, and I saw what they gave, and I realized, okay, this could be useful. I could disassemble the stack of 500 I have, because I don't think I'm going to be making perfect plus potions.
Or you could build an auto disassembler and put it in there. Just saying.
I could. See? How long would that take me? I have about 500.
It would probably take you less than a day, maybe 20 hours.
Oh, yeah.
If you have
okay.
Mark 2.
All right. Yeah, I can't do a Mark 2. It would have to be a Mark 1.
Well, 30. Okay, so if you got 35, maybe a day and a half.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Neat. All right. Yeah. That might be a good test. So, as you can tell, that is definitely a device that I will be using and will be going for with invention. Next up is the Whetstone at level 100 invention, which is used to repair broken or degraded weapons or armor. I don't know if this will be used much, because you can go to a POH and get a reduced price on this.
What yeah, I think? When I first saw this, I thought the same thing. But I think the caveat here is the portability to where
if you don't get to, and you don't have to pay.
Right. And I think it, you know, something nice to if you're in a mass, or if you're in an event with some friends and you're bossing, it's not like, oh, you know, I have to go to my POH and go do this real quick. You just boom, throw it down. You know, you could store it. I don't know if you can store it in a beast of burden. Anyway, if that's the case, you know, it's just a quick thing. You throw down, repair, boom, you know, you're back in the game. So I think it could, you know, hold some merit, especially if you're on an aura timer. So, you know, you're losing like 5 minutes or something going out and repairing everything and, you know, rebanking. But I don't think it's going to be among the most used devices. I'll just say that.
Right.
So.
All right.
Yeah, it reminded me of like the legendary pet perk. That's essentially the same thing. You can repair your stuff on it. So if you roll up to a boss, you're all set, everything is ready, and then you figure out your boots are broken, rather than having to go all the way back, you know?
Right.
So.
All right. Next up is the Divine-O-Matic Vacuum, though.
Or as Shane so coined it, the sucker thingy, so we'll just.
Yeah, the sucker thingy.
Yeah, the sucker thingy.
Or what they could have done to be uniquely British about it is they could have just called it the Divine Hoover, because they call their vacuums Hoovers in the UK. Because that was a brand of vacuum. So
I'm sure there was some copywriting in there somewhere, but who knows?
Well, I mean, it's a proper noun. They say they're going to go Hoover the house.
Well, there you go.
So
I think that probably
could have got away with it.
Save a few syllables there, yeah.
So basically what this will do it'll basically use up empty divine charge packs that you have sitting with you. And when you're training divination, it just converts those memories you're pulling in and converts them to full divine charges.
So. Are the empty, I'm not sure, are the empty packs, are they stackable before they're filled?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Because I think that would be a make or break. You know, if you could have an inventory of 100 of them,
They'd have to be, I think. Yeah. Because it would make sense to do it otherwise.
Yeah, the fold charge packs are stackable, so why wouldn't the... Yeah. Okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Deductive reasoning is a powerful thing.
I sold a bunch of them yesterday because I just had simple parts sitting around.
Yeah.
So they were going for like almost 20K.
I say it's probably best that you did get rid of them before the hype dies down. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and you can make these with the skill at level 101. So, all right. So that's the what did I call it? The divination sucker thing.
The sucker thingy.
Okay. Next up is the miraculous treatment, which is also useful, but not as much because it doesn't regrow prevent. Trees from being diseased. I think we have something else in game for this already. You can use it to revive any dead farming patch apart from regular or fruit trees. So you could either go with the herb protector, or you could go with the miraculous treatment here. I think it would depend on what you were doing, but I think the protector might be the better way to go.
So the miraculous treatment, that doesn't work with both types of trees, or is it just one type of tree?
It doesn't work with fruit or regular trees, so you cannot revive
fruit
trees.
Or wood.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you basically, this is saying if your herb patch dies, you can use this. If your bushes die, you can use this. If your hops die, you can use this. But if your tree dies, you're kind of out of luck. So, yeah. Okay, I guess that's something a farmer would search for. How to revive a dead tree. I neglected to include the term RuneScape in that, and I got some interesting results.
How to revive a dead tree? The sucker thingy.
Yeah, just get the sucker thingy and just. Now, I forbid you to type that in without having.
Oh, I run with safe search on. Okay, I thought there was a way of doing that, but I'm not 100% sure, so I'll just have to wait and see on that. All right, so next up is the flat pack depacker, which we talked about. We were struggling to find a use for this one.
Now, I'll be the black swan here. While I'm not going to defend it to its full potential, I actually, as weird as it is, out of all the devices, I've probably used this the most since release. But that's only because searching for strange rocks, instead of having to go back and bank the entire time and bum, 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 I can just use my butler and the flat packs that I make. I don't have to send back with him. I can just, as soon as I make a flat pack, I basically note it. So I can have three or four of these in my inventory. As soon as one dies, then I can activate the other one and it notes. So I'm not having to bank literally every trip. I can bank maybe every five or six trips between making the flat packs. I sort of lost my train of thought there, but I don't think that really has any use outside of that.
Yeah, and
unless you're just training construction.
Them.
Right, exactly. Oh, anyway. That's also true. But again, I think
level 109.
I think that's a little steep for its lack of utility.
All right, so let's just assume. Let's just assume you're doing mahogany tables, flat packed. Now, let's see what these disassemble to. Yeah, they just disassemble to simple and crafted parts. So.
Slightly underwhelming.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did you say that will note the flat packs?
Yeah.
Yes. As soon as you make it, it will either disassemble them or it will note them in your inventory.
I wonder if we can then. Because you know you can use the flat packs as currency for your kingdom,
I did not know that, and I have a lot of flat packs in my bank.
Where?
Yeah, no, you can use that as currency for your kingdom. Like when you go to deposit money, you can use flat packs, but you couldn't note them before, so it took forever to do it. So now I wonder, since it's noted, if they'll accept it.
Where do you find this option?
You just give the flat packs to
you just click the flat pack on the guy.
Yeah, it's either that or it's underneath. The, you know where they need the furniture and stuff for the stuff they're building. I know you can do it because I used to do it. I used to have like 25 rings a while so that I could tell.
My brain is like, my mind is blown right now. I did not know that.
It's a different amount for each one, but I always just use the mahogany tables.
But that seems like that would still be a loss though if you were doing mahogany tables.
But it's a loss no matter what. It's just a way to use it since you're
training. So is each flat pack, is it worth different, you said?
Yeah, I think so. The mahogany tables, I think, is what I was using, which was maybe the best. Or close to the best. I don't know. It's the best I used.
Right, because let's be honest, who's buying mahogany table flat packs in bulk on the Grand Exchange? So, I mean, at least you're getting something out of it, right?
Well, like I said, otherwise, like myself, I just used up 40,000 mahogany planks making tables over this last weekend, and they all went on the floor.
Right.
So, exactly. I mean? Like,
might as well squeeze something out of it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I do say now, if you have this device, there's your way of training construction with protein.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Protein planks. Okay. Yeah. I did not know that was the case.
Something we thought was the most useless device there is might have the most potential.
But I can tell you, you definitely do not want to disassemble them, because I can tell is you just get simple parts and craft it.
Unless you're making regular wood or at most maybe oak. But
Yeah. It's a 75-25 breakdown, and even with that, there's like a 40% chance of junk.
Unless you're going Iron Man and you've cut your own logs and you've put it in the plank maker and you've sort of had that vertical
kind of
integration
through.
Let nothing go to waste.
Exactly.
Okay. Well then, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
I wonder who else all knows about this. We also have the teleportation compactor. Now this one sounds very interesting. Used to compact any form of teleport jewelry to hold infinite charges at level 110. So
I think that's misleading though, because I was not able to use any jewelry.
Okay, what
happened? Maybe it was just me. Maybe I did something wrong. But the first thing that I tried was ferocious rings. That worked. So you can have like one compactor with like, I think I have like 85 charges or something on it with the ferocious ring. But you couldn't put anything else on with it. At least I couldn't put anything else on with it.
No, each compactor has to have a separate thing. So you have one for Ferocious Rings, you have one for Games Necklace, you have one for Ring of Dueling, stuff like that.
Well, see, I was having trouble getting the Games Necklaces working. I couldn't get the Amulets of Glory working or the Horde Stalker rings. Now I already had one made. Like I don't know if that made a difference or if there was a bug.
Apparently,
sure,
only 20 can be
it.
Compacted at once.
Okay.
For any set of jewelry?
Yeah,
or
just in total with one compactor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that was my problem.
Additional charges are added by adding more jewelry, and it's one teleport item per compactor. So you can't have, say, an Amulet of Glory and Ferocious Ring mixed together. It needs to be an Amulet of Glory compactor and a Ferocious Ring compactor. But you have to pick and choose with that.
And this is a game changer for Abyss Runecrafters, let me say, because I could not tell you how many times that I forgot, I need to change out my Ring of Glory or my Amulet of Glory every four times.
There's a better option now, Dave, unfortunately.
Well, it's been,
8
years since I've done it, so.
You know, I definitely agree with you. This would have been a game changer back in the day, but I mean, I guess it could still be if you haven't done the wilderness task set, because now you can just have the wilderness sword that teleports you directly to Edgeville.
Right. Or, I mean, aside from that, like Tannis was saying, the having 25 rings of dueling to go to the kingdom before you could note flat packs, like just that sort of thing. I mean, just having all that, not having to change it out. I mean, I will say, I know I said spring cleaner was my favorite device. I just like seeing Treasure Hunter come into the game, being able to earn it. But I will say that the teleportation compactor is by far my favorite device in all of this, because pardon my language, I am a teleporting whore. I love just it's because I'm always trying to find the fairy ring as quick as I can. You know, minus lodestones, I'm always looking for, you know, those obscure teleports. So having something that I can basically save bank space and not have to worry about switching something out if I'm, you know, trading something methodically and, you know, having every 8 trips I have to switch out or whatever, having something that is less work for me is always a win for me. So I really love this this device.
Compacted Ring of Duelings for Mud Rune crafting by taking the balloon network to the Earth Altar by way of the Castle Wars Bank. There's a use for it.
Yep.
Ring of Slaying, maybe. Definitely the game stackless one, because I mean, so many of those, and so annoying when they don't get when they don't stack anymore in the bank.
Exactly.
And, you know, the more I see this, the more I'm concerned that we don't need a bank rework for these kinds of things like that, because like each week I feel like we're talking about updates that are compressing the amount of space we're using in the bank and limiting the amount of space taken up by common items that we're using, this one potentially being one of them. Granted, here, yes, you need level 110 invention, but hey, it's still an option. So.
No, I agree. Yep.
And I mean,
I can't count how many times that I've used a games necklace and then I put it back in and, oh, I need to get rid of some stuff for bank space. First thing that goes, games necklace 7, just saying. So it'll be nice to save that. So
yeah, definitely agree with that. All right. I didn't think much of the teleportation compactor when I was doing the notes, but hey, now it's there.
Yep.
Next up, we have the potion reservoir at level 112. This automatically drinks any potions that are placed into it. We did some testing with this, Tycho and myself, yesterday, and we basically came to the conclusion here that this is best for time potions, and that's the only ones it really works for. So you can have one potion reservoir active on you at the same time. So basically, you would have to choose to say, I want an anti-fire potion reservoir, and there you go. I want a prayer renewal potion reservoir. There we go. So you can do it that way. Another thing you can do with that is you can have a look and see that, you might want to go for a combination potion because, the combination potions are all timed. So an overload combination potion or a holy overload, for example, if you're doing Queen Black Dragon, that's what you want to use. Or even all the overloads that are all combined together with their various effects and whatnot. So I think that's where this one comes in. I'm not a PVMer, so I'm not entirely sure what the best case for this would be, but it's definitely out there. So what do you think?
Yeah, I was wondering if it would be good with the, you know, the gem dragons that knock your anti-fire down. So that would
So what do you use for that then? What potion do you use?
I would use... Well, see, I don't know, because I would want to use Searing Overload normally, but you wouldn't really need that. So you'd probably just need Super Anti-Fire.
Right, and then you could just drink your overloads regularly. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. That's a good use case for these. And, you know, once again, level 112 invention, so it's pretty high up there. But still, it's going to be a convenience factor that it's automatically going to sip these potions for you. So... I think this is going to be a good one. And, of course, these are not tradable. So, once again, these are high-level skilling benefits that only people can get who have done invention. So, and as I mentioned before, of course, potions on a timer cannot be used. So, that would of course not include things like your super restore or super attack potions, just to say it right there. So alrighty, next device is the equipment separator, which is the one that everyone has been talking about and has wanted for a long time. You remember when we first heard about Invention Batch 2, they said that we were going to have the ability to remove gizmos from augmented items without destroying the augmented item?
Yep.
Well, here we are. Here's the way this is done.
Finally.
Unfortunately, it requires level 115 invention.
And it requires a level 15 piece of equipment.
Uh-huh.
That is no picnic to get.
That's right. So, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like this should be a feature of invention proper. Or at least lower, like at level 100 or so.
Yeah, I think 115 is a little steep, but...
Yeah. Because what happens right now if you augment an item? Like, you can just dissolve the... You can dissolve the augmenter from the item, but that also dissolves the gizmos, right?
Right.
Yeah, and... I mean, basically, what this is going to do is make you need to put off your higher level perks until you're at least 115 invention, so that you can.
Or you're committed around to keeping the item.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, so that could have been a bit lower, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like this one should have been a part of the skill, just like the other things were, like the equipment dissolver and whatnot. Should have been a bit lower. It could have still been a device, but maybe make it, you know, somewhere in the 80 to 100 range, I think. I think that would have been a better way of going about this. So, but hey, that's just my opinion. I don't know what the...
No, I agree. I mean, it's sort of, out of all these devices, that seems the closest to basically Invention Core. So I think, I definitely agree. I think that should be, you know, around level 80. You know, requirement to sort of keep that, I don't want to say keep the interest, but sort of just keep that momentum going with people so they have, you know, something to work for instead of, you know, 115 invention basically being in game for invention and finally actually getting to the end, I guess, big result
for the story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think that it should be at least a little bit lower. But.
Well, there is the large gizmo bag also at 118.
Right.
But, I mean, you don't really count that so as no. A device. So, alrighty, there's our devices. I think there's a lot of use in here. This kind of goes into what we were talking about in the beginning about how, you know, it makes invention feel useful. It makes it feel like it's a true... elite skill and, you know, kind of is a win for everyone involved. So it's really great. Anything else on the devices before we move on?
Nope, I think that's it.
Alrighty then. Let's see. So next we're going to go into a bit of about the aftermath of what was happening here. Now, you know, we talked about the fact that inspiration was removed and they brought in double XP, or sorry, plus 50% XP for blueprints and whatnot. And that kind of did set off some alarm bells with people. And Dave, you said you were seeing, or you got messages that you got 120 invention again, right?
Yeah, it being 126, I guess after I got 127, I guess it was broadcasted that I had just achieved 120, so...
It's a little bit weird. But anyways, this spurred a lot of discussion in the community and lots of question about if there was going to be a rollback. So there was a posting that was done on the 18th by Mod Shawnee, and he says that they're not planning to do a rollback on the game at this point, as we've seen no actual gains of duped XP via invention blueprints, which is what people were saying was happening, but of course didn't. So basically what they did is they took a snapshot of the top invention XP gained prior to the server reboot when invention came in, and an example of what it looked like after. And the top people inside these trees were exactly the same before. So there was no disproportionate high XP gains in invention, and they say there's nothing suspicious as well. So given the fact the table remains the same, they think everything is A-okay.
Yeah, if anything, it was just a broadcast error, yeah, but nothing in actual raw XP gains.
Because if you think about it, okay, so what did we have changed here with this? I mean, it's entirely possible that people who are already 120 just could have had the flag set internally somewhere.
Right.
By, you know, maybe the fact that there was other stuff that was unlocked that was locked that wasn't unlocked before, or that maybe there was just there was new invention items, so it set that flag that they weren't discovered or whatnot. So if you pass that 120 XP mark, there you go, you get a broadcast. That could have been what it was. But also there was a discussion where people were saying that there is blueprints on the poor optimization level that would somehow provide some kind of XP spam. And Mod Shawnee says that didn't work for them, and he was trying to find a way to break this. So once again, you know, it's really interesting to see all these false bug reports coming in. Jagex say there's no problem here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the people would have been seeing, but you got to believe that if they look at their internal metrics and they look at actually trying to reproduce these things that people were talking about and nothing happens, then it's a little bit odd that that was being reported like that. So do you guys notice any anomalies on the first day about this?
I don't necessarily want to say anomalies, but the only thing that I really saw was the mass amount of people, at least that were being broadcasted, getting 120 invention. But after a few of my friends messaged me in game saying, "Grats on 120," I was like, "What are you talking about?" Because I got 120 like over a year ago. So I think it. I don't know. It obviously wasn't an anomaly, but I did notice that it was at least a broadcast error. So, I mean, if anything, I think they should look into that if they already haven't.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of rollback, there's nothing. I mean, it was all within the realm of 4 mil to 8 mil experience, depending on how many, you know, previous blueprints you hadn't discovered, because obviously the 50% applied to anything. So
right.
I had some stocked up, so I got a little bit more, but that's not to say that other people didn't. So.
And with the 50%, they did say it was going to be about 6 million base XP plus 50% on top of it. So,
which is a hefty chunk
in the
XP curve of invention, even, because, you know, you need 40 mil for 99 and you need 80 mil for 120. So, I mean,
that's almost if you had the ability to unlock all of them at 99, that's almost a quarter of the way there. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's definitely a hefty chunk, more than you're going to get from any lamps or anything. So, yeah,
yep.
I mean, it is what it is.
There is also talk of a gold dupe. And once again, they talked about all the methods that they were given to try and reproduce this with machines and whatnot. None of them worked. Talk with the analytics team to see if there's any kind of surge of gold coming into game from the machines, but they're pretty confident that that's not the case. And ultimately, there's going to be an eye kept out on anything going forward over the next week to see what's going on here. And of course, quote, we're cautiously optimistic there is no XP/coin dupe, but we'll be watching all of the same. So feel free to PM us and we'll look into it when we can. So, seems as though most everything is working fine from that perspective. But there were a couple of little bugs along the way that were hot fixed. Specifically, these were tweeted out by Shawnee. He says the biting perk is now using sensible scaling when calculating the critical hit chance. Previously, what happened with the biting perk, this is, of course, related to the elevated perk activation chances that came in with this updated higher leveled items. It was getting the plus 60% chance to proc rather than the 0.6% or something along the lines of that. And as everyone knows, the biting perk relates to your crit chance. So this would have been very game breaking for combat. So
absolutely.
Good. This was fixed. And, yeah. Also, potion drinking delays, like for Sarah Brews, are once again being obeyed. So I guess you could just spam click Sarah Doman Brews and drink them all up at the same time. So, and, you know, it makes sense that you see things kind of like this, because they did have the ability to interact with the potion drinking system and automating that with the potion sipper or potion reservoir, as it was called. So there was also another one where they disabled Invention Guild instancing to allow you to see invention machines, so they couldn't be seen, so you had to re-enter the guild for that one. So just a couple little things like that that were hot-fixed here. Iron Men were also benefiting from the bonus XP when they weren't supposed to be, so that was fixed. We've now prevented the spammy messages when using degradables without invention unlocked. Interesting. I don't know what that would be referring to. Both the compact and the non-compact variants of the Slayer Ring and Games Necklace teleport options will now work consistently. Machines will no longer fail to work each hour, and Divine Charge will be properly used. So as you can see, lots of interesting little things that they were slipstreaming in here for this week's update. So glad these were all fixed. So, now, as for a bug that I noticed this week that there's some problems with the bank. You guys notice any of that?
I didn't have any issues with the bank.
I did not notice, but that's not to say that it wasn't there, because I haven't been in my bank too much, to be completely honest. So
the first time I opened my bank after this update landed, my beach items were all faded Ectophials. Then the next time I opened it, my runes were all rune ethereal Lawfeet. So, of course, the items are still there and they're fine when you withdraw them, but the bank inventory icons were messed up in some way, which is a little bit odd. But hopefully that'll get fixed in the upcoming patches if it hasn't been already. I didn't actually look at my bank yesterday, so I don't know. But
what makes it odd is it was consistent as well, because I've had the occasional little hiccup where, the item from the previous tab shows up on the other one until it sort of catches up with itself, and then it'll be fine. But having, all of your runes be the same item, or all of your beach-themed items be the same item, is kind of interesting. It would be a little bit more, random or understandable if it was just, everything was sort of mix-matched, but, themes of items were a set item is interesting to me, so.
Definitely.
Secret bank rework.
That's pretty funny. All right. Also, the cog toggle, so you can toggle off the cog on items if you don't want that to be seen. It's a nice little cosmetic option for everyone. Anything else before we move on here to the last note that I have regarding this invention update? I don't think so. You guys got anything? No? All righty. The final one is, quote, reworked 120 invention emote. Harder, better, faster, stronger. So that's a nice little reference there to some song or something like that. So I don't know what the old emote looked like, but there's a preview of the new emote. You start off with your workbench. You see components flying up around your head. You invent something, get a blueprint, jump up on the invention table, get the components, invent something, and then the 120 variant has this invented item fly away, whereas in the 99 emote it doesn't fly away. So there's a bit consistency there now between the 99 and 120. So if you guys have that, you might want to have a look at it. I don't know if anyone looks at their completionist capes, or sorry, capes of accomplishment anymore, do they?
I will admit that I have not checked out the new emote. I don't really think I did the emote when I got 120 a year ago, so I guilty as charged, but I'll definitely have to check it out and see what it's all about.
All righty then. Well, let's move on to a little thing here regarding Treasure Hunter this week. So this week's Treasure Hunter update is the prize pool. So, how do you guys feel about this? The prize pool will be active on Treasure Hunter from September 20th to September 25th. With every key you use, you have a chance to earn a bonus prize on the prize pool interface at the top of the screen. Claim that extra prize immediately, or use more keys to get a chance at more rarer prizes. And each key you use will apply one of two actions. add an extra prize to your pool, or remove all prizes gathered so far from it. So, you guys think this is a little bit too much like gambling?
Aside from the fact that that's all Treasure Hunter has been, yes, I think this is a little too far. But for what it's worth, that's my two cents.
All right. How about you, Tanis?
I just found it confusing and wouldn't have, like, even if I bought keys, I wouldn't spend them on this.
Yeah, I mean, I will say out of all of the Treasure Hunter promotions, this is the most confusing because I'm still not 100% sure how this works. And I've never had a tutorial on a Treasure Hunter promotion that lasted for more than two windows. So, again, for what that's worth, I think it's a little over the top.
But, all right. So here's how it works. You do your normal keys and whatnot, and that causes the prize pool ticker to tick up a bit. And it'll tick up through yellow and then orange and then red and then ultimately a purple prize. And for each one you do, there's a chance that you get knocked back to zero. And you can claim this prize at any time you want, or you get knocked back to zero. I got knocked back to zero after my second daily key. And, I mean, you can see what all these prizes are going to be. Like, for example, the octopus backpack was my top purple prize. So that is the incentive for you to keep going if you want that. As to whether or not this is a good thing for Treasure Hunter, it does encourage people to spend more keys, I think. So,
yeah, financially, I think it's smart, obviously. But in terms of, like, game content and gameplay, I don't think so. It's funny you mentioned the octopus backpack because that's what I got. And if anything, that's going to prevent me from playing more because I don't want that. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, this is here, and I mean, it's a Treasure Hunter promo, and all I got to say with this, when you are either using your keys in-game or if you're buying keys, use your own sense to determine if you want to take the risk that something like that will be disappearing. So, all right, let's talk a bit about what we're going to be doing for RuneFest this year. So this year we have a contingent of people from Clan Quest going to RuneFest, and we're going to have, hopefully providing no technical details, some Q&A with them recorded via audio to slip into our podcast this week for RuneFest. So with that being said, we're doing a special RuneFest episode of Update this Saturday. Right now, providing nothing changes and no one gets sick, we're going to have Dave, you're going to be here, and Parnassius will also be here co-hosting with us. And our current strategy is to go through the RS Reveals, RS Mobile, and RuneScape skilling sections of the show and talk about those and provide you guys a nice overview and discussion on that with some Q&A from the people of Clan Quest at RuneFest as submitted electronically. So that's what we're aiming for. This is going to happen on Saturday. I don't think we'll be doing listener questions that day because it's a live event. And I mean, unless you guys have questions and you get them to us that day, we might be able to work that in. But nonetheless, expect another show to appear late Saturday on the feed for RuneFest. So you guys are getting a special edition show this week for RuneFest. So look forward to that.
We like spoiling our listeners.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not gonna spoil what I did last year on the RuneFest episode where I reveal a co-host by accident, but anyways. Yeah, it should be interesting this year. Focus on RS Mobile. The theme that we heard tentatively is Back to Our Roots for the RS Reveals. And it should be interesting to see where they want to go with the next few years of skilling and Mod Timbo's talk. So
yeah, I think this is going to be probably one of the most profound RuneFests, considering we have that back to the roots and unfinished business. I think we're going to see a lot of stuff that the community is going to love.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, super definitely. Excited.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to questions right now. We have one this week, and it's from Trekkie. Dave, you want to give that a read?
I will. Yo, question to pick your brains. Currently we have Priftinus, which is the Elven City, Keldagrim, the Dwarven City, and Dorgish Khan, the City of Goblins, Gutanoth, Dwelling of the Ogres. What other race would you like to have a grand city of, and what would they have to offer? Currently we have Hobgoblins, Demons, Dragons, Giants, anything else? And I will say, we can't forget Vampires, have their big area, Darkmire, I believe it is.
Yep, that entire Eastern Lands area there.
And if you want to go as far as to say ghosts have Port Phasmades. So a couple others that he may have not realized. What do you think, Shane? What would you like to see in terms of another Grand City?
Yeah, and you know, the first thing that kind of came out with me is one of those abstract kind of cities, like we have the Tazar City, and I have the list posted here. I think what you could have is you could have some kind of organization of demons and whatnot, and maybe link it a bit to the Majorat, for example. That might be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, I was thinking demons, and you know, having sort of an atmosphere of maybe inside of a volcano or inside of a giant rift or something. But I felt like after thinking about that, it kind of is what Tazar is. I mean, it's in a volcano. It's kind of got that underground lava sort of where you would expect to see demons. But I like your idea of sort of a Majorat setting or a Dragonkin maybe, or just some sort of...
Yeah, the Dragonkin one, because that already exists and it's on a different plane. And we could have, you know, theoretically gone there before with that one quest where we sent one of them back there to live out his time.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that would be my thing as Dragonkin. I think that would be the most interesting, and I think they could do a lot with that in terms of having a grand city and not just, oh, here's, you know, three houses and a bank and everybody that inhabits this is Dragonkin. I think they could really sort of, I don't want to say a Menophos or Prif scale, but I think they could have some cool quest lines and maybe tie up some loose ends and sort of have that be the end result, because it seems to be when they tie up all these huge quest lines, you know, there's this really cool end result that, you know, there's something... They have something to offer rather than, oh, here's, you know, three treasure hunter keys and a couple lamps and, oh, you get something else to invent with invention or something like that. So, yeah, I think that would be super cool.
Yeah. What about you, Tannis?
Oh, well, I guess I kind of have two answers here. But first, I would love to see the Icians come back and take
Dark Fear. Right.
That would be cool. And other than that, maybe an Avians city.
ABNC, yeah.
You got that one for me, didn't you?
No, did I? I don't know.
Oh, okay, because I was a huge proponent of the Armadil quest.
Oh, okay, yeah. I wasn't thinking that, but yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, the Armadil quest in the ABNC world, I think that would be a good option. That would actually be my second choice, with the demons / Majorat kind of gathering area being one, because you got to remember the state they're in after Children of Moss. So that would be interesting to revisit. Then Avian Season, of course, the Dragon Riders. So, all right,
cool.
Good. All right,
I like that question. That's good.
It is, and it has the potential to go a lot into lore as well. So that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alrighty then. Thank you, Trekkie. If you guys want to send in your own questions, update.rsbnb.com/ask. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB. You can DM us there, DM your questions, or just email them to questions@rsbnb.com. All right, so we're going to move on to tech news right now. We got a bit of an interesting tech news segment this week, covering lots of areas, and we're going to start with security, and probably I think something that everyone has heard of before, or at least anyone who works with Windows PCs, because maintaining Windows PCs used to be a hard thing to do, and to some degree it still is today. So there's a piece of software out there, it's called CCleaner, and this is an application that has over 2 billion downloads, and with this, its update and download chain was infected to the point where 2.3 million people who downloaded CCleaner were infected with malware. This malware could have been anything from ransomware or keyloggers. And according to Avast's own figures, who owns this, the exact number is 2.27 million people ran this software. What this application does is it cleans out your system and optimizes things like temporary internet files, history, cookies. It's basically just a system cleanup tool. And in reality, you probably don't need that today given the way Windows 10 works. So I mean, there's better ways of doing it, but I don't think you need this software. The malware on its own would send encrypted information about the affected computer. It would include the name of the computer, installed software, and running processes back to the hacker's server. The hackers also used what's known as a domain generation algorithm, so that whenever the crook server went down, the domain generators would create a new domain and use that to receive stolen data. So basically this means is that this is a sophisticated attack, and what's more is that a piece of software out there that is used by millions of people was compromised through the software download chain, which, you know, is really a problem with today's software, because you download a piece of software from somewhere on the internet, you don't know if it's safe, right? So it's definitely something you got to be thinking about when this is happening here. So I think the best course of action at this point is to uninstall the software and run Windows Defender. The Avast CTO said, quote, "There's no need to panic." He told Forbes, who had the story here, that it used the Avast security tool to scan machines on which the affected CCleaner's apps were installed. In 30% of Avast installs, CCleaner was also on that PC. And this led to the ultimate conclusion that the attackers hadn't launched the second phase of their attacks to cause more harm to the victims. So basically, these people had been infected with a ticking time bomb that could have been used at some point in the future to do who knows what with the system and send something down to these poor people. So, yeah, this is a big piece of software that has just been hacked and compromised. So I guess what I'm going to tell everyone out there is to stop using CCleaner, and Windows 10 can probably optimize itself at this point, and Windows Defender is going to be the best way to go for this. But it, of course, raises questions about where we download software. So any of you guys ever use CCleaner?
Yeah. Unfortunately, which is why this is kind of concerns me. Removing it, and because you know, it's honestly for me, it's just easy because you can just do a quick scan, just get rid of all the crap, and not have to go there yourself. But if this is a case, then I'm definitely going to be reevaluating my situation. And for you know, all of you non-math people out there, 2.3 million people is a lot of people, in case you didn't know. So yeah, that's definitely something to consider. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, you just look at the magnitude for this. Yes, nothing happened and no sensitive data were stolen. But how are people going to know that this piece of software on their computer is bad? I mean, Avast will remove it. Sure, they'll remove it with their software. But Microsoft is also going to have to do something with Defender to throw up a warning label on that. Mm-hmm. So my word of advice to everyone is just to run Windows Defender on this. So. Just a bit of warning out there if you've ever used CCleaner or you have it on your system. Don't use it anymore.
Yep.
Alrighty. Next piece of tech news related to Steam and a way they're improving their user reviews segment. So basically, Steam is rolling out some changes to user reviews for games, and they wanted to provide some insight onto this and why a new practice known as review bombing is one of the largest problems that Steam is tackling. So review bombing is a tactic where players post a large number of reviews in a very compressed time frame about a game. Most often it's aimed at lowering the review score of a game. And at the same time, they upvote each other's reviews and downvote all the other reviews. And Steam says to understand why we think this is a problem at all, we first need to talk a bit about the goals of user reviews and the associated review score. They say for user reviews, the goal is obvious: to allow people who have played a game to tell potential other purchasers whether or not they should play that game and why. When this was first implemented, we hoped their existence would be enough, but it became clear quickly that many of the potential purchasers wanted a summary of some kind, so we created the review score. Now as to why review bombing is a problem. On one hand, the players doing the bombing are fulfilling the goal of user reviews. They're voicing their opinion as to why other people shouldn't buy the game. But one thing we've noticed is that the issue players are concerned about can often be outside the game itself. It might be that they're unhappy with something the developers said online, or about the choices developer has made in the Steam version of their game relative to other platforms, or simply that they don't like the developer's political convictions. Many of these out-of-game issues aren't very relevant when it comes to the value of the game itself, but some of them are reasons why a player may be unhappy with their purchase. So basically, what Steam wants to do is that they want the review score to be more representative of what the actual thing or what the actual game is saying here. So what are some possible solutions they could do? One is to simply remove review score. Another idea is a temporary lock on reviewing, similar to how stock markets prevent trading on specific stocks when abnormal behavior is detected. Then they say if we lock reviews for on a product for a short period of time, what does it mean exactly? Are players no longer able to post reviews at all during that time? Or should they be able to post them, but we ignore them for the purposes of calculating the review score? In the end, we didn't like the way this ultimately meant restricting the abilities player to voice their opinion. We don't want to stop the community from having a discussion about the issue that they're unhappy about, even though there are probably better places to have it than in the Steam user reviews. We could change the review scores calculated, focusing on more recent data, but in the end, Steam decided that they are not going to change the way that players can review games and instead focused on how potential purchasers can explore the review data. Starting today, each game page now contains a histogram of the positive to negative ratio of the reviews over the entire lifetime of the game, and by clicking on any part of the histogram, you're able to read a sample of the reviews from that time period. So basically, if you see a game take a huge tank, you're going to be able to click in and see why that's the case, and not just have some game downvoted to oblivion by some angry people online. So, thoughts?
I think that's a really good, a very good solution to that, because you're basically not silencing people. You're giving the customer or the person that uses those reviews, you're giving them the opportunity to basically see why it's voted that way. And if it is crap, then you can go and look and say, hey, when this first came out, it had awesome views, and then it tanked. And then you can look at what those good reviews were. Hey, it's a great game, and then see if it had a giant drop-off, what it was, if it was just nonsense, if nothing correlates. So it's giving the average gamer basically the ability to do their due diligence, which I think is good,
yeah.
Honestly. I think it's better than just sort of removing the platform or, you know, putting these mass amounts of restrictions on it. I think they're, you know, empowering the person that's using reviews a lot more and, you know, sort of bringing that side up rather than taking the other side down. So good on them.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the huge problems with this is that you end up in a situation where we're at right now on Steam, where there's so much garbage on Steam that you really need to rely on these reviews to know if something is good. Because right. It's almost as though anyone can publish a very simple game using some unspecified game engine and get on Steam. And that is, of course, populating, you know, the very top-end games that we've seen all forever on Steam. So I think it's a good thing to do at this point, because we need a way to wade through all the garbage and,
yeah,
you know, exactly. You see a game, you want to know if it's good or bad. And if it gets review bombed, then, well, it's not exactly a good metric. So, Tannis, yeah, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad to me, this is a suitable compromise. I wouldn't have wanted them to change it too much, because I can see both sides of this. Yes, there could be a game that, it could be unfairly review bombed, but at the same time, when a company makes a decision and the only recourse you have is to give crappy reviews and drop their rating to get their attention, that's really the only tool gamers have a lot of times. For example, I think you guys would remember over the summer when it wasn't Rockstar, but its parent company came out and said there's not going to be any more GTA 5 mods. We're not going to allow it. And it got review bombed. And it forced change. So to me, that's
well, you're still going to be able to express yourself with this. And
well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a good like compromise, but I wouldn't want them to go too far.
Yeah, because I mean, if you see a recent drop and then a recent uptick, you're going to be able to see what was happening there. So, I mean, if anything, this makes the review bombing more effective, but it also allows people who want to use their own brains to see what's actually happening there.
Right.
Yeah, because when you see that dip, you could just, you know, be like, okay, you know, you can just search what happened in July of whatever, GTA 5, you know.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, I'm sure something would pop up and let you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where this is. Yeah, so if you, let's see. So I'm looking at this game right now. I'm looking at Planet Coaster, and you see over the last days and whatnot, you can actually see all the reviews going back for the last month, and it shows how many are positive and how many are negative, and you can just drag the graph along. It's actually a really, really neat feature, and it shows the reviews from that time. So looks good. I don't think this can be used for negative, and I think it wins for everyone, and it destroys the review bombers too. So that's good. That's cool. I like it. And, you know, I also just got to say here that people who want to build a game and sell the game and get on Steam, they need Steam to work. And review bombing was preventing Steam from working the way it was designed to. So I think that this is a very good thing for them to be doing. So,
yep.
Very nice. And I mean, with this coaster game, you can go all the way back to the beginning and you can see what the reviews are all the way back to November 2016. So it's all right there. So. All righty. Now, our last piece of tech news is something that's taken a little bit out of context, and I'm going to preface this with the note that I do not like Gizmodo at all for the content they produce or the way they write their headlines. And this is a good example of this, about why we need to be very careful when we're reading these kind of stories online. So the story headline goes as follows: Chrome will soon mute autoplay videos with sound. Here's why you should be worried. Then it goes into the story and it says, Google has surveyed the advertising landscape that it dominates and determined that it's time for change. Beginning in January, its Chrome web browser will mute autoplay video ads with sound by default. The effort is being framed as a way to clean up the web, but it could just as easily be interpreted and disguised as a further move to solidify Google's monopoly. Then it goes into the fact that back in April, Google talked with Wall Street Journal, saying that they were planning to adopt the Coalition for Better Ads list of standards to talk about ways to make ads on the internet better for everyone. Because I think we all really dislike an ad that is going to be really annoying to us, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what Google is actually going to be doing is they're going to be building their own ad filter that can be turned on in Chrome. Which I always found very interesting, because of course Google has their own ad revenue business, and at the same time they want the internet to be great for everyone. So it's kind of interesting, and I can see why Gizmodo would write this headline, but this is Gizmodo editorializing and using something that was going to happen in Chrome regardless to peddle their own agenda here.
Mm-hmm.
In October, Chrome 63 was going to add an option for users to disable audio completely on the site of a user's choosing, and in Chrome 64 coming in January, Chrome's new autoplay policies will be put into effect. Now, if you delve deeper into the story, you'll see that they got a whole section here on autoplay, and more if you go to the Google blog for Chrome, you'll see that this is something that the Chrome team has been talking about for a while, a way to calculate when a website should play sound and when a website shouldn't play sound without a user's consent. And this is something that's all based on the page and a user's interaction with the page and whatnot. And, you know, it's not until the very tail end of this article that Gizmodo talks about this as a reason as to why this could be happening. And it's interlaced with the same narrative that it could make Google a monopoly on the internet for ads, which at this point is up for debate. I mean, they might as well be a monopoly. because they're definitely the largest out there. But still, let's be honest here and talk about that this isn't necessarily just an initiative for ads. It's an initiative for all videos online. And they updated the story on September 18th, but they didn't exactly say where in the story they made the updates to it. They just interspersed it throughout to, of course, make it look as though we wrote this and, you know, it's about all autoplay videos and not just ads. And at the end, you got the little footnote that, okay, it's not just for ads, but it's for all autoplay videos. And I think a better result here would have been to actually go to the Google blog and look at what Google has to say about autoplay and whatnot. So, I mean, it's just really bad reporting by Gizmodo. And this is here because you might hear that Google is bringing out this initiative to help themselves with ads if you, you know, just are reading through your Facebook feed or something and you see this story. But in reality, Google is doing it for all autoplay videos. And Gizmodo is just bad at writing headlines. So
let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And what is their argument that it should be allowed? That, I mean, why should you have to listen to something without turning it on?
Right. And that's what Google is effectively saying here, is that you shouldn't need to listen like that. So let me just – I have a link to this somewhere. I read this story. Let me just pull it up because it warrants it right here. Let's see. No, not that one. Not that one. Here we go. I think. I don't know. But it was on the Google blog. But I remember from the headline of it, some of the things that were being talked about were, if you open a page in the background, starting in Chrome 64 in January, it won't be able to play sound, regardless of what's on that page. Now, if you open a normal page and you don't interact with the video, it's still not going to be able to play sound. You need to interact with the video in a meaningful way for it to autoplay sound. If you just open the page, it'll be able to autoplay video, but the sound won't play as well. So, Tanis, they are progressing on that path to make it so that, you know, you don't need to listen to anything you don't want to on the internet, which I think is really good, because we've all been there where we open up a link in the background, it starts blaring, right? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is great. I'm failing to see the downside to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's really interesting why a company like Gizmodo that got their start on the internet like this, would be interested in pursuing an angle like this on the story, when in reality they should be very grateful for what Google has done. So I don't know. It just didn't make sense at all here. So, but I'll see if I can find anything on this where I had it before. But anyways, full show notes and link at update.rsbnb.com for this. So. All right, we ready for the final marathon of this podcast?
It's going to be quite the endurance fest.
Yes, it will. So first and foremost, let's see what happened with Skill of the Month over Double XP weekend. As expected, we were flatlined throughout the rest of the month, and bam, this weekend Parnassius is in first place with 45 million summoning XP gained so far. Second place is GemAndy52 with 18 million, and third place is Flash with 12.4 million XP gained. So as you can see, Double XP Weekend did have a huge impact on our summoning skill. and we were kind of expecting that, so not to be surprised, but we'll have to wait and see if anything else changes here going forward. So, all right. Now, achievements.
Normally, gentlemen, start your engines.
Yeah, normally we don't go through huge achievements because, I mean, there is a lot, but it is Double XP weekend. So as a result of that, we're actually going to read through all the achievements that happened on Double XP weekend. So
we're going to celebrate your achievements.
Yes. Yeah, so Tanis, kick us off.
You're worth it. And damn it, people like you. All right. On the 19th, PTV Sully. I got 99 Constitution. Divine Quest on the 18th got 99 Invention. Zil Kam got 99 Prayer on the 18th. And Scry. I guess there's no R. S-C-W-Y. I got 99 Runecrafting on the 18th. And they also got 99 Defense on the 18th. They were busy that day. And Desmo, 350, got 99 Smithing on the 18th. Luke Todd.
I think that's Totodile.
Yeah, okay. Totodile.
All
isn't right. Totodile a Pokemon?
Yes, it is.
I don't know. I missed the craze. Got one. He got 120 Invention on the 18th, or she, however, whatever the Pokemon is. Dartmouth March got 99 Runecrafting, and that's it for the 18th.
All right, now moving on to the 17th. Trips Travis, 99 Herblore, Reku, 99 Prayer. Rotatoes, 99 Prayer as well. Lord Dusty got 120 Slayer. Chodo 3000 with 99 Hunter. A Seafarer with 99 Hunter as well. PTV Sully again with 99 Smithing. Duke Juker with 99 Divination. Netherios with 99 Firemaking. Desmo 360 with 99 Summoning. The Virewatch got 99 Ranged. Ray 66, 99 Crafting. Arcane, otherwise known as Dave, got 120 Slayer as well on the 17th. Congratulations. Moving on to the 16th, we got Reku again with 99 Ranged. Daydreamer with 99 Prayer. Touchpad Pro, 200 million farming XP.
Oh, there you go. Shane's hero.
Maybe, we'll see. Maybe. Cyan R with 99 Runecrafting. Next, Sicarius with 99 Prayer. Kotahi Athwa with 99 Strength. Zil Kam again with 99 Summoning on the 16th. Next, Sicarius with 99 Crafting. Catmac with 99 Runecrafting. A Seafarer with 99 Herblore. Next, Sicarius again with 99 Mining. And Catmac with 99 Divination.
And to close out on the 16th, I like Slayer with 99 Construction. And then on the 15th, we have our very own and dearly beloved Shane, 12088 with 99 Hunter. Congratulations on that. We got Chodo 3000 with 99 Summoning, Rolladude 540 with 99 Herblore, Catmac with 99 Strength, Re 66 with 99 Herblore, Chodo 3000 again with 99 Prayer, Catmac again with 99 Invention, Catmac once again with 99 Thieving. Definitely a successful weekend for him, I have to say. Kotahi Achua, that's a mouthful, I'll tell you what, with 99 Range. Cyan R with 99 Construction, Quest Caping with 99 Herblore, Eve Shaba with 99 Defense, Iomises with 99 Invention, Darth Marth with 99 Agility, Kebab Thief with 99 Agility, Catmac once again with, let's see, oh my gosh, okay, he's wow, he's got like, what, seven or eight 99s over the weekend. We got Kebab Thief with 99 Agility, Catmac with 99 Constitution, we have Kotahi Achua with 99 Herblore, Kotahi Achua again with 99 Crafting, Catmac with 99 Defense, and Kotahi Achua again with 99 Attack, Catmac with 99 Attack, Rolladude 540 with 99 Slayer, Zil Kam with 99 Herblore, and the Virewatch bringing up the rear, and certainly not the last with 99 Prayer.
I think we counted that out, and that's 58 achievements.
Yes. That's a lot. That's a lot of 99s and 120s and 200 mils.
lot.
So, yeah.
Pat myself on the back, pat Shane on the back, and pat everyone else on the back. Great job. Successful weekend for sure.
Yeah, we'll get more into that in just a little bit. Just a bit of a throwback here to tech news. I did find the link I was thinking of regarding Google Chrome autoplay. It comes from the developer Google website, and it goes into details on the autoplay policy changes and how it calculates the media engagement on various websites and if it should actually autoplay. So the full reasoning actually can be found here, and it's not some obscure monopoly thing as Gizmodo was saying, so I'll include this in the show notes as well. But I guess before we move on to the pick of the week, I'll just remind everyone that Informer's hiring, and if you'd be interested in writing for Informer, we basically want you to write a RuneScape article between 500 and 1,000 words about anything RuneScape related. Could be why you love RuneScape, could be about your favorite skill, could be about a recent update, your choice. Write that, email it to Shane at rsbnb.com, and we look forward to hearing from you. And Tanis, you can tell everyone how great it is to do that.
It's pretty awesome, and it will definitely improve your writing skills over time. So, I love it.
I think one of the things that isn't known, but I think something that is really great about what we do is you guys get to choose all your topics.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no, you know, assigning of topics or whatnot. If you want to write about something, that's you. If you want to cover combat exclusively, that's you. It's all
up to you. We are not censored, and that is, we have a lot of freedom, so it's very cool.
Yeah, you're even allowed to write things that criticize the job Jagex is doing and what's
or
wrong
the podcast
with,
host. I mean, if you wanted to,
you could. you just got to back yourself up with data, right?
That's right.
Just check your facts, and as long as you have a valid argument, I'll listen. Yeah,
exactly. So. Anyways, send those in. We want to hear from you. All right. So what do you got for the pick of the week, Dave?
My pick of the week is a little website called Tasty Trade. Just to preface, over the past 2 or 3 months or so, I've actually been doing a lot of self-education and sort of looking into personal finance and investing. As most of you may know, or may not know, but should know, especially my generation and I think our generation collectively, I think it's very important to start, you know, looking towards retirement or just even, you know, financial security. So Tasty Trade is a website that was founded by two guys. They are actually credited with creating one of the largest stock brokerage platforms called Thinkorswim, and they created that. They sold it off, and they created this. You know, they made their multi-millions on that, so they created this Tasty Trade, and it is basically a platform where they do a bunch of they have a lot of programming where experts basically just sort of break down investing to the average person. You know, very informative, very educational. You know, there's some humor in it, so it's not just this sport. You're not like listening to lectures. You know, it's in a podcast talk show format. And like I said, they break everything down, every, you know, concepts of investing. They actually have their own brokerage platform now. So, you know, once you sort of educate yourself, you can sort of get your feet wet and, you know, sort of dip your toes in the water with that sort of thing. You know, I mean, I could go on and on, but I really enjoy their content. It's all free. You know, you can just sign up and you can get alerts on, you know, your favorite shows. And there's just really a goldmine of information. And I think the most important part is that it's free. It's free information that can make you money if you put it to good use. So I think in any case, I think anybody with half a brain really sees that this is quite the opportunity. So that's my pick of the week. I've been really invested, pun intended, investing my time into all of the content they've been, you know, putting out recently, and, you know, the reports and just all of the education that they're providing for free. I think they're doing a great thing. So I think it's definitely worth taking a look at and tuning in to see if it sparks your interest, because whether or not it is interesting, I think it's something that everybody our age should be thinking about nonetheless. So
yeah, and it doesn't look like it's got a Wall Street bend or anything like that. It looks more
it looks more
independent as well. And as you all know, after the 2008 financial crisis, Wall Street and the banking industry in general had a lot of egg on their face, and there are lots of questions to be asked about them and you know, about what the consequences were for what happened, which of course there were no consequences for what happened. And I think it's good that you have an independent independent source like this to go to for information on this.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's very accessible, and I think that's the main thing, because when people hear about, you know, a stock market or day trading or, you know, Wall Street or something like that, they think of, you know, the big banks with the, you know, the tailored suits and, you know, on the trading floor. And in all honesty, that's just really not the case, but that's what they want you to believe. But, you know, it takes to trade. I mean, these guys are down to earth. But that's not to discredit their knowledge. I mean, they made hundreds of millions of dollars on the stock market and creating. I mean, they were market makers. They know their stuff, but they are on the what they call retail trader, you know, level, which is, you know, you and me. If we, you know, we want to get into the stock market, it's really just they just break it down. It's down to earth. You know, it's not just like I said, it's not a lecture format. It's very independent, and it's really a you know, the entry point into investing, and I think that's so cool. Again, being free and being independent, and you know, they don't really have any vested interest in to try to sell you on something. They just want to educate, and I think that's extremely powerful.
Right, and one of their videos here is 5 things only noobs do, and it's not just a video where they, you know, try and get you to watch it. You can see that they actually talk about in their notes here, which is good. 5 main things to avoid, you know, not use probabilities, trade illiquid underlyings, legging in and legging out of trades, misunderstanding sizing and buying out of the money options. So not only do they talk about it, they have full show notes, which I can tell you guys hear from experience is that whenever you're doing a podcast or a video podcast, you definitely want notes to go along with that. So
It's really nice because, you know, they talk to you. They don't talk at you.
Right.
And it's funny because, you know, there was a segment I was watching, where one of the guys was saying, you know, he is like basically the founder of Tastytrade, and he was talking about how one time he got scammed, you know, buying, you know, actual bars of silver and stuff like that. I mean, he was just, you know, very personable and be like, hey, don't do this. I was an idiot. I don't want you guys to do this because this is what you got to look for in these sort of situations. You know, with investing, it's like, look, it really is a numbers game. It's a math game. If you know your numbers, boom, it's done. Don't do what I did in, you know, my early days. And they are really focused on, you know, personal finance and just getting the average person into trading because it's a very powerful tool. But everybody is just so intimidated by all the big banks and the big money. So,
all right. Sounds good. Tastytrade.com.
Indeed.
Well, what have we been up to in RS? Let's start with you, Tannis.
There was double XP prep, and then there was double XP. So I pulled 20 mil on the main.
Nice.
Thank you. And then I got Junior his first skill cape and 99 construction. So
ooh, there you go.
Construction.
You need to input that on your form account as a as an alternate account so we get those achievements.
Oh yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, just fill in the secondary accounts field with your name and you'll get
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, major kudos on that untrimmed construction cape. I like his style because
that's right. Untrimmed.
Construction was my second, but my first was untrimmed smithing. It's very unconventional. I'm a very unconventional a skiller. So yes, I can definitely appreciate that on a deeper level. So yeah, that's awesome.
Cool.
Nice. Thanks. All right. Anything else there with that, Tannis? Or was that it?
No, that's that was it for me.
All right. How about you, Dave?
Aside from my highly successful but rather uneventful bonus experience weekend, I got my 120 Slayer, so I recomped a week after the
amnesty.
That's what I was looking for. Week after the amnesty ran up, so got my comp back. So I'm happy with that. I'm also I would call it even more happy that yesterday I finished my regular Shattered Heart D&D. So 30 weeks done, got my statue built so I can tick that off the trim list. That was a huge hurdle for me. So I'm glad not to have to be grinding that out every week. Although I will be working on my Golden Rocks now, but I can hammer that out. I don't have to wait weekly because you don't have a weekly lockout with that. Once you complete the statue, you can start collecting the rocks again. So that was my main thing. But looking forward, I think in the next week, I'm going to probably be tackling my Calgarian Demon titles, as well as, if I can get that finished, start working on my 4,000 choppy kills. I'm about 1,500 in, so I'm just praying for those enhancers from Maw, so I'm hoping that...
I don't like the way that sounds.
I'm praying that the Maw can pull through for me with the tweak, and so far it hasn't. I've gotten Implings, so I'm waiting to see the benefits from that, but we'll see. But that's kind of my... my week behind and week forward. So,
alrighty. Well, as for me, I had a very eventful double XP weekend. It was a it was really interesting. Let's see, so that ended on Monday. I'll just put that in there. So I gained about 8 million XP through the entire process here of double XP weekend, which was really good for me. You know, I started off with the intention of only doing Herblore, because that's what I had saved up for and what I was gathering. But I also had a bunch of proteins that I decided. So I looked around what I could do with this. And oh, lo and behold, here we are. I have the ability to get some Hunter XP doing this. So with that, I was able to get 99 Hunter. That's weird. Why is that not showing it? I don't know. I'm just looking at my XP gain, and I'm not seeing Hunter on here. Anyways, I went from 97 to, or sorry, 96, I believe, to 98 to 99 Hunter. So lots of Hunter levels there with that, with those protein traps that I had laid. So that's how I opened up double XP weekend, nice and calm with proteins, got 98 and 99 Hunter. I was 97, so I did that. And then after that, I turned to Herblore and made 5,300 Super Prayer Renewal Potions. 5,300 of those. And, you know, that was okay. That was a kind of a laid-back experience. And I don't know, there wasn't much to write home with that about. But that's weird. I'm just looking at Rune Metrics, and it's not showing my Hunter XP for this range.
Hmm.
I don't know why that would be. Do protein items not count on Rune Metrics?
No, I mean, they should. I mean, XP is XP as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. I mean, lamps count, so.
Right.
Should.
Yeah, because they're definitely not here. But any.
Because yeah, I had some protean memories, and it showed up for my divination gain. So I don't. That's odd.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever. I don't know. It says I gained 1.5 million XP, but I mean, it's not showing on the split. That's weird. I was going to extol the virtues of Rune Metrics here, but I'll have to figure that out. Anyways, after that 5,200 potions, I decided it was time to do something I hadn't done in a long time. I had about 12,000 rune essence sitting in my bank, so I went soul rune crafting in Menaphos. And I got lots of rune crafting XP. I got 95, 96, and 97 rune crafting. And then after double XP ended, I was a few hundred K off, and then I got 98 rune crafting. So,
there you go.
Sweet.
So right there, you can taste it.
So I went 95, 96, 97, all with the soul altar, without using the rune span. So that was fun, actually.
And I applaud you for that.
Yeah, and you know, the real funny part about it is I only got killed once using the Abyss on double XP weekend.
That's a plus, I guess. Look at it positive.
Yeah, only killed once using a demonic skull on double XP weekend. I called that successful. And then what was even more successful beyond that is, as I was doing this, I got Rue, the runecrafting pet.
Oh, there you go. I envy you. I want Rue and I want Willow. Too. Those are my two big go-tos I really want.
I actually got both of those. I got Willow a long time ago. Yeah. And that was my fifth pet. And
ooh, got your title.
Nice.
And I don't think I got that much XP at all in terms of doing these getting these pets. So I think I'm really lucky with this. If we go back all the way to August of 2016, I think it was August 22nd they came out, and we look at my XP gain. 21.4 million Herblore XP for that pet. 4.5 million Runecrafting XP for that pet. And these are all the amount I've got in that range. It's been less, of course. 9.2 million for farming. And divination, 2.1 million. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And yeah, so, you know, I've been really lucky with these pets. So,
I think the only three that I have, I got Flo, the fletching one. I have, whatever the cooking one is, the Godlin thing, Ramsey, that's it. And, I got Malcolm, the invention one. So those are my three.
Oh, and 1.5 million for wood cutting as well. So,
yeah.
I guess you call that lucky, but yeah, so that was my double XP weekend. I think it's one of the most I've ever done for double XP weekend, and I just went in doing this expecting to do Herblore. I didn't expect to do the runecrafting part or the hunter part. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I'm happy with that, and I decided to go. I was going full tilt with this, and I subscribed to Rune Metrics for this. So
might as well.
This is the first year that the first double XP I didn't have it this time, but that was all right. I went wild with my cleansing stones.
Okay, so this month I did get 1.5 million hunter XP, so that is noted. It's just a question of why is it not showing it on the XP split,
right?
I don't know, that's weird. I go to the last 7 days and it's only showing 2.7k hunter XP. I have no idea what's up with that, but anyways, but yeah, really great double XP weekend in that regard. I think that was all I did, but it was really capped off by Rue the Runecrafting pet. So
yeah, that is awesome. That's a great one to get early too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but that's about it. So as you can see, very full double XP weekend, and lots of invention this week, and that's what I'm going to be doing going forward, getting that invention up there for the farming items. So anything else before we go?
I think we got it.
Yep, that's it for me.
Alrighty then. Well, with that being said, we'll see you in a few days for another episode of RSBNB Update, this time covering RuneFest. Hope to get you guys that on Saturday night or early Sunday, all things going well. So we'll see you then, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
See ya.
Bye.